All right. Well, we always try to look to our sources at United Way of Connecticut when it comes to important information about our states and our residents' health and well-being. And here we are in September, Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, and we're going to be talking to the president and CEO of United Way of Connecticut, Lisa Tepper Bates, in a few minutes about the escalating traffic that is being driven to Connecticut's 988 system and the team that operates those critical and vital support lines. But first, and more recently, we have seen the release of the latest Connecticut poverty assessment with some shocking news. When you look at 4 out of 10 Connecticut households, more than 500,000 here in Connecticut unable to afford basic survival needs according to their ALICE status, ALICE being asset limited, income constrained, and employed. We're pleased to welcome back to the program Daniel Fitzmaurice. He's Connecticut United Way's Director of Advocacy. We're going to speak with him about the issue of ALICE and the escalating pressures on Connecticut's families. We just want to remind you, before we get into that conversation, that the value of public data goes far beyond holding public officials accountable. With access to public data, business owners can determine where to create new jobs, nonprofits and state agency staff can identify issues and develop innovative solutions to address them. And that's why maybe you should consider making plans to attend the Connecticut Data Collaborative's annual conference this year on December 3rd at the Hartford Marriott downtown. You and 250 Connecticut data heroes will come together to strengthen connections and reaffirm our state's commitment to data integrity. You can learn more and peruse the agenda and workshop schedule, as well as register, by visiting ctdata.org/conference2025. All right. Well, Daniel, welcome back to the program. Thanks so much for making time this morning.
Thank you for having us, John.
As we indicated in the introduction, you guys have been very, very busy, and no rest for the folks on the advocacy team here that you're working with. The latest information is gripping, to say the least, disturbing even, and it sadly, doesn't really seem that we've got any relief on the near horizon. Let's hear a little bit about the latest ALICE statistics and this release of this poverty assessment report.
Sure thing, John. And yes, you know, we spent the summer really unpacking this information. But, you know, as a reminder, you know, it's very, very challenging out there. You know, while we were doing that, you know, families with children were struggling to afford paying for summer camp so they could continue to work through the summer, particularly in late August as we were getting ready to release this information. There hardly are any summer camps available for families. And so, you know, they're making hard and impossible choices about how to make ends meet between housing and food and transportation, healthcare. And also, we really wanted to lift up very surely that this is a very extraordinary time in our country, and that does hit home in every town. I'll share a little bit more later about, you know, some of those issues. But, you know, you mentioned the top line issue. You know, we've been doing this report for more than a decade as United Ways across the state. All United Ways in the state participate in this. And we've reached a record. Once again, it's a couple years of records now. So we're at 581,000 households who are living paycheck to paycheck or worse. And, you know, what's notable, John, is that we've been growing that number in our state ever since 2019. Mm. So it's just going up and up and up every year. And to us, it's very clear that this is a price issue. This is an affordability issue. You know, these are families who are working, you know, multiple jobs sometimes, and they make an okay wage or even a decent wage, but they can't keep up with the cost of everything.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, Daniel, because, you know, in many other states across the nation, the payroll and income that a lot of these 40 percenters are earning here in Connecticut would be enough to afford them all of the necessary basic survival needs, and then maybe even a little bit extra for some, you know, for some fun things to do, or, you know, get a new refrigerator, some new furniture, or a bicycle for their kid, maybe even throw a few bucks into a savings account. But it really is the cost threshold of everything here in Connecticut that is putting seemingly most of the pressure on these households.
Yeah, absolutely. And you do know how to have fun, John. Buying a refrigerator is a real fun project. But
hey,
we do hear from families all the time that it is when you don't have a savings, right? That's the asset word in Alice.
Right.
When you don't have a savings, you know, you are one broken refrigerator or one kid getting sick and you didn't go to a specialist.
Yeah.
You know, you are one missed shift away from perhaps losing your house. But look, you know, the other thing that I think is really important to say about this information that we're putting out right now is that I mentioned that spike in the overall share of households across the state going up so much since 2019. But, you know, we work in local communities. We work on the ground. So we really wanted to look and see what that says to our towns. And what we noticed, and you can see a map of this on our website at ctunitedway.org/advocacy, is that financial hardship is really growing very fast in places that are typically very stable, or we consider them stable, notably our suburban and rural areas. So I just to make that clear to the listener, you know, there are communities like our more urban centers like Bridgeport and Hartford and New Haven and Waterbury that have very high rates of ALICE households in their communities. But we're not actually seeing a significant change over 2019 to 2023 there. What we are seeing is like in communities like New Milford and Chester and Granbury and Salisbury and Sterling, you know, significant increases, like 15-20% increases in the share of their community that is living paycheck to paycheck.
There's also the phenomena that these pandemic era benefits are aging out or disappeared completely. How much of a role do you think that has played? Because it is just that suburban rural demographic who may have, eked the best benefits from those pandemic era subsidies.
That is very correct. In fact, we've heard a lot from our local partners since we started putting this data out there over the summer, that they're very aware that there are challenges in our suburban and rural towns who are not typically equipped to provide traditional social services. You know, there might not even be a food pantry within a reasonable distance in that area. But the pandemic relief was often provided in cash, you know, whether you think about the expanded federal child tax credit, even the unemployment protection payments that were provided to people. And every town also had American Rescue Plan Act dollars they were spending on various things. That's all gone.
And student loan suspension, even for the younger people.
We had a speaker last week who is, a college graduate. I would not call her a younger person. I hope she doesn't mind me saying that. But she's still struggling to pay student loans.
Yeah.
And the student loans are not just an issue that face young people. It hits people for decades after they finish school. And in her case, she's an educator. She's teaching. But again, teachers are one of those common careers in our communities that don't pay as much as it needs to really live in that community. Mm-hmm. But the other issue that we're noting, and you kind of hit on it, you know, for a while during this increase in that mismatch between prices and wages, families were getting a lot of kinds of cash assistance and other kinds of supports because of the pandemic. That's all gone now, and the opposite is really the case. So, you know, we're really pointing to tariffs as one of the big issues that's going to continue to hit the price issues that we're already struggling to deal with. So just as an example that I think is really relevant for the work we do, already since March of this year, there's an analysis that says that baby gear is up $400 because much of it's imported from other countries like China. And so you're getting the same item like a stroller or a car seat that you do need for your kid. You can't leave the hospital without a car seat that's properly installed. But they cost so much more today than they would have just a couple of months ago. Overall, the tariffs are costing households in Connecticut, according to the Yale Budget Lab. Just this year, it's going to cost everybody $2,400. That's just on average. It could be more or less depending on your spending, what you buy. But again, these are the way the Alice research works. I mean, these are families that don't have a dollar to spend or an extra dollar to spend, I should say. So there's really going to be some struggles ahead. Or again, families are going to make some hard choices between, you know, filling a prescription and filling the fridge.
Yeah. Well, we can't see the United Way's Alice identified in any kind of reporting without the words in the same sentence or in the next sentence, including a federal poverty level. Can you just explain to people as simply as possible how the federal poverty level, you know, works as a dynamic against what people are experiencing in terms of shortfall?
Oh, absolutely. We do this a lot because it's a common misconception about, you know, the poverty line, the federal poverty line being a good metric. You know, we just think it's not a good metric. It doesn't tell the full story of what it costs to live where you are. And part of that is because the federal poverty level is established and uniform across the entire country. So let me just give you an example. You know, we talk a lot about two working adults with two children who need childcare. So according to the federal poverty level, they need to make combined wage of $32,000 a year. That's the federal poverty level. If you make $33,000 a year, you're not in poverty by a technical definition. And you brought up the point earlier, John. Yeah. That's the same definition as every other state in the country.
Sure.
So you could see how just that fact alone breaks the concept into two. But the Alice data, they use real information about what it costs for the basics, you know, nothing frivolous, you know, basic housing, basic childcare, basic food, basic health care, even basic technology. You know, everybody does need a phone these days, right? So if you put all that in for the same family, the Alice threshold for that family is a combined wage of $116,000 a year. And so there's a huge gap between $32,000 a year and $116,000 a year. And that's the gap where families feel the most pressure because there are very limited options from a public benefits or even a community benefits perspective for them. There, it's not no options, but, you know, you end up falling off what's called the benefits cliff if you are above the federal poverty level by too much. And so it's hard to be, you know, we talk a lot about we want families to be above the Alice threshold. You know, we don't want to be doing this report every year and telling you that the rate of financial hardship is growing. But I think that is going to require some adjustments to how we help families effectively increase their wages in good, great paying jobs, and also making sure we're controlling those costs so that there's a better matchup.
I don't see night or weekend jobs or many gig type jobs, you know, bridging that $115,000 a year gap between the federal poverty level universally and what a Connecticut average household
family
needs.
Try to do, though. Yeah, we talked to a family over the last week who spoke at our press conference, and she said, "Look, I've been working as many double shifts as I can this year because I know what my bills are coming up." She noted the childcare bills for summer camp in particular. It's like I knew we were going to have to pay you know, upwards of $300 or $400 a week for summer camp for my two kids. And so all that means is I'm working double time, and that means I'm spending less time with them. And that means I'm experiencing all the stress that comes with working 60 hour weeks. And, you know, again, these are families who do know what to do, and they're working really hard. They're good at making money and managing their money. Yeah. And again, these are jobs that have to be done in our community. Sure. We can't go without, you know, medical assistants and paraprofessionals in our schools and cashiers in our stores and restaurants, right? These are not optional jobs in our community. They are necessary, but the stress that comes with not being able to afford to live is what is not necessary.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, Daniel, as we get into our last minute or so here, because when anybody says, hey, I'm doing okay, you know, it's not my problem. In fact, it's things like that stress that a year, 3 years, 5 years down the road are going to be putting much more immense pressure on our public health systems and the taxpayer dollars that go to offset care for people who are experiencing other more drastic health emergencies as a result of the stress that they're suffering because they're working 60, 70, 80 hours a week to barely scratch the surface of what they need to have a normal lifestyle here in Connecticut.
We hear it all the time in conversations with families. It's the hardest part about living paycheck to paycheck is it's hard to emotionally navigate that. It's not a technical problem related to budgeting, right? These are folks who do know how to pinch every penny, and they're happy to do that. But the every night stress of being just one bill away from maybe losing your home or having your kids go without food is a real hardship that should be avoided at all costs.
Well, if anyone looks to the neighbor to their left and then they look to the neighbor to their right, one of those individuals is likely one of the 40% of Connecticut households, over 500,000, 538,000 households unable to afford basic survival needs in 2023. We appreciate being able to go to you, Daniel Fitzmaurice, to get filled in on all the latest information. And sadly, perhaps the reason behind why another aspect of United Way of Connecticut, their 988 suicide and crisis support line, is experiencing such a increase trend in usage and demand. And we're going to be talking about that next with the president and CEO of United Way of Connecticut, Lisa Tepper Bates. So we'll say farewell for now, Daniel, and pick up on the line with Lisa and talk a little bit more about 988 here in September, Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. Thanks, Daniel.